Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Don't miss out on amazing end-of-sale savings on bedding, curtains and more. Available now in-store or at harrycurry.com.
Anne-Marie, good afternoon to you.
Hi, John. How are you keeping?
I'm good. Thanks very much for getting in touch with Liveline. Tell us why you called.
So basically, over the weekend, I read a very concerning update. It was on social media, on Facebook and on Instagram, and predominantly on Trina Golden's Instagram page. Basically, the SNAs will be redeployed within mainstream and in special schools and autism classes. So for me, I'm just wondering what the impact will be, because I have a son who is six. Mm-hmm. He was currently in mainstream school with access to an SNA and a special education teacher.
Okay, you've been you've been reading about the implementation of the National Council for Special Education's SNA review process. It's quite a mouthful, and we'll come back to it. Will you tell me a little bit more about your son, Ben?
Yeah, so Ben is six. He's a great child. He's very funny. He's very lovable. He's a little amazing little boy, and he loves going to school. When you meet him, you know, he's just an amazing little child. So I'm very privileged to be his mother, and also my husband. So we're very delighted. I'm very happy that Ben is our son. When you have a son and you're such pride for him, I'm privileged to be his mother.
I love that you said he loves school as well. In particular, was it something you worried about?
So originally he was diagnosed at 3.5. So he was in creche. So I was working full time at this time, and I kind of noticed some characteristics of autism. It was flagged in the creche, basically, that this could be potential concern. So my child is very verbal, good reasoning, met all his milestones. So there wasn't a concern cognitively on that stage, but there was some other characteristics. So autism is a very wide spectrum. Mm-hmm. Each child who's diagnosed or adult, it's not a linear process. So until you have the knowledge and awareness, you're not, as a parent, I wasn't too sure. So I went to my, your GP to get a diagnosis, to kind of get a bit of information, what I'm supposed to do, and my public health nurse. So I was referred under the public process. However, the timelines for a referral to get on a waiting list, it was very long. Fortunately for us as a family, we are privileged that I was able to go privately and pay thousands of euro at 3.5. I had waited about 6 or 7 months for this psychologist report under a multidisciplinary team, and he was diagnosed with autism. Mm-hmm. Now, as I mentioned before, autism is a very wide spectrum, and what the psychologist said to me, he would be considered high functioning, Asperger's and mild. This was at 3.5.
And it cost you thousands of euro, Emery.
Thousands of euro, yes. So I spent a lot of money, not only on the assessment, but also it's critical. Early intervention is critical for any child with a diagnosis to have the supports in place as well. And I also paid a lot of money on private supports, including occupational therapy. And then also I was on the public system. But again, when you read stuff as a parent, early intervention is key. I wasn't going to wait around. I had concerns as a parent. I wanted the best possible supports for my child. I will do anything for my child. And, you know, luckily we have the financial mm-hmm. resources, given that we are both working, I'm not working at the moment, but we're both working full time, and I could pay for that. But that's not the case for every parent and who have the access to this. And it's quite a lot of, it's very confusing. What pathways? Who do you go to? Do you go to CAMHS, CDNT, and you become, you don't know what to do.
And did anyone advise you, Anne-Marie?
No, not really. I went to the public health nurse with my concerns, because he was presenting, he was verbal, he potty trained, it's just his behaviour, some of his kind of characteristics, not making eye contact, sociable, there's certain things. I did a lot of research on it. So the public health nurse put a referral in, and also I went to my GP at the time, and my GP kind of pushed it off, but I knew as a parent that there was and the creche raised it, that I needed to get a diagnosis and I needed to get whatever supports I could at early intervention, because from what I'm reading and research, it's key. for the success of my child and any other child who's been diagnosed with autism, because the spectrum is quite wide. Not, as I said, every child is different. Each child has their own struggles, even neurotypical child. So as a parent, I just wanted to make sure that I had everything in place. So yeah, it's a lot of filling out paperwork, a lot of, it's a quite a, you know, as a first time parent who's been diagnosed, like he's my only child, it's quite overwhelming to go through the process, both publicly and privately, and filling out a lot of paperwork and going through the process. But, you know, I have no choice, do I?
Did you need that private psychologist report to go to school or to get a place for Ben?
No, because he was able for mainstream school, so the psychologist recommended he's fine for mainstream with access to an SNA and any resources that are available within mainstream school. So I had, before he went into mainstream school in junior infants, I had the reports ready. And I know some parents aren't lucky to have that report because I went private, so I had everything in place, so the school was aware. So I followed the psychologist.
What I was wondering was, did it play any role in you getting access to a special needs assistant for Ben?
No, it didn't, because the school applied for the access what he required at that time.
Mm-hmm. So how does it work? He has an SNA in school and he loves it, you said.
Yeah, like he has access to an SNA. She provides supports in terms of regulation and movement breaks, and then also visual aids, and then also he has support with the special education teacher, which I believe is in the class as well, and then he goes out for some resource work separately or once or twice a week as well.
And does he share the resources of that SNA, Anne-Marie, with other children then in the school?
Yes, he does. Now, I'm not privileged to know what each child has, and there's a lot of needs in a lot of schools, so yes, that SNA is shared within the classroom. Yes.
And when you mention him being brought out for the movement or sensory breaks, for anyone who doesn't know, how important are those, Anne-Marie?
They're extremely important. It's like if you had a child who had glasses and you took the glasses away from that child would not be able to see. So some children, this is critical. My child is a sensory seeker, so basically he needs a lot of movement to learn, and he needs those movement breaks in order to sufficiently access the curriculum and access learning. It's critical for him and other children within his school to get those movement breaks and sensory breaks.
Mm-hmm. Would you say, Anne-Marie, you've seen the benefits of having those breaks and the SNA? Like when Ben comes home, what's he learning? Is he telling you about it?
Yes, he's very happy. He's learning a lot. He's accessing the curriculum. He's telling me about his day, you know, what his friend's doing, you know, what he learned. Like, he's telling me this. Now, I'm very lucky that my child is able to tell me this. And some children are not able to be so vocalised and verbal with that. So I'm very lucky on that. As I said, the spectrum is quite wide and different children will have different struggles within that diagnosis. So I'm lucky that my child can tell me this. And, you know, he is chatty to tell me. How his day is.
It means a lot, I'm sure. Now, so you so far so good. Things are going well with school, with the help of the SNA. When you heard about changes then, you're worried.
I'm extremely worried. It's like I've had sleepless nights now because I'm deeply concerned in terms of what this means for my child. And not only my child, but thousands of children across Ireland at the national level. Like, does this mean now that my child, I'm after spending thousands of euro at this point in time on this report that tells me my child is fine for mainstream school and with these accesses and these supports, does that mean now I have to get a new report and go back on the waiting time and waiting list, spend more money on an updated report with the National Council? I have to apply by the 1st of October if I need a special autism class and I have to have an updated report. What day are we today? And what day is 1st of October? So how am I supposed to get that report? It's only within that 1 year window that I have if I need a place for next year. If all the supports are going to be pulled, like where will he go?
Okay, I can tell you're concerned, confused too. Or have you heard anything direct from your school about this?
No, we haven't at the moment. Mm-hmm. I believe the school haven't been formally notified on what this means. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, I have some friends who are teachers and they have seen this online. Mm-hmm. I believe from Trina Golden, she's advised exactly. It was in some bulletin or something that a lot of people didn't see. It wasn't it wasn't kind of formally shared through the correct process. Okay. Now, I'm not in school. I'm just reading this as a parent, so I don't know the ins and outs of the school, but from reading what I can see, they're not been formally told this is the new process and what they need to do.
We're trying to find out, Anne-Marie, and you're helping us a lot with that. Yeah. Stay with us, please, on the line, because you mentioned Trina Golden, who's the principal of Owen Bui Educate Together School in Cork. Trina, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, John.
And thanks very much for joining us as well. And in your post on Instagram about the implementation of the National Council for Special Education's SNE review process guidelines, you say it's grim reading. Tell us why, please.
I think for any teacher or principal or parent, I'm also a parent of a child with additional needs who's reliant on an SNA, so I'm reading it from through a few different lenses. And it's grim for a number of reasons. It really seems to be focused on kind of trying to put schools off applying for additional SNA resources. They've narrowed the timeline to a point that it's questionable of if it's possible for most schools to make the application in that timeline. They've greatly narrowed the criteria they're willing to consider to grant additional resources.
In what way, Trina? Could you explain that to us?
I can. Like, the important thing, for people unaware, how SNA allocation works is that you're given an allocation back in May, and you're told this is the amount of SNAs you have for next year in your school. Now, that allocation is based on an SNA freeze a few years ago, so it hasn't at any point been updated. So as a new school, because we only opened a few years ago, we have had to do one of these reviews every time we have more kids that need SNA support. So for these reviews previously, it was primary care needs based, and the NCSE outline what a primary care need is. So it's medical needs, it can be physical needs, it can be a severe sensory and emotional support. So that would be what Anne-Marie was talking about there for her little guy, and the same for my little guy. There's other things like toileting needs, feeding support needs. So these are the primary care needs. That's what you get an SNA for, and that's what I can say, that's why a child is granted SNA access. Now, what they've done with this new review process is they've narrowed it down and said that they're only going to consider additional SNA supports if you have a new complex medical care need, a new complex physical care need, or a large number of level 3 complex care needs. Now, there is no definition in there of what complex means. There's no definition of what level 3 is, other than the highest level of support. And they're not considering applications based on just primary care needs in general, which is what SNAs are supposed to be granted under.
Okay.
So I have 35 new kids this year. If a number of those have needs, there is no mechanism now for me to apply for additional SNA support.
And Trina, you're 3 weeks into the school year. Can I ask, have you got the allocation of special needs assistance for your school and your class for the current year already granted? Because I would have assumed you knew that coming into this year.
Yes, so it's granted in May. But when I say it's granted, it's just the same as it was last year. There is never an addition to it. So the only way to get additional SNA resources is through this review process.
So you may seek a review, is it? Or a parent like Anne-Marie might seek a review, is it, if you weren't happy
the
or
school,
satisfied
the
with
school
the school
needs
would?
To seek the review. And the review, which previously we would have had a mainstream review and a special class review, they've now combined the two. So to give an example, if in one of our autism classes, we have two autism classes, if we have a child really struggling and they need one-to-one or two-to-one support, we would have previously been able to apply specifically for that child to have that support in the class. Now you have to complete a whole school review, and the initial response from the CNO is going to be, can you redeploy SNAs from mainstream to support that child? So they're no longer separate. They've bunched them all in together.
The CNO you refer to, that's the special needs education officer, am I right?
That's it, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And parents will be familiar with that term, I'm sure. Can I tell you, Trina, we've been in touch with the Department of Education to try to make sense of this as well. And I have a very lengthy statement. I'll just read you the first paragraph for now. And it says, please note that the allocation of SNAs for special classes in mainstream schools has not changed. The National Council for Special Education guidelines issued relates solely to SNA reviews, and there's no change to the allocation process for schools or special classes. All schools can apply for a review where they require additional SNA support, and we encourage the school to contact the National Council for Special Education to do this. Does that alleviate any of your concerns, or is it still this review process you're
not
worried about?
At all. No. So what they mean there, and wasn't really in question, they're answering a question that wasn't really asked, but when you open an autism class, you're given a teacher and two SNAs for the autism class. That hasn't changed, and that isn't going to change. There was never a concern that that was changing. But if you need more, so we're talking about a situation maybe where the child in the class needs full-time one-to-one support or at times two-to-one support, then previously you would apply for additional support just for that class. That's what's changed. So it's not that the baseline allocation has changed, it hasn't. But now we might be looking at moving SNAs from mainstream into an autism class if there's significant needs in there. And that's leaving children in mainstream without support. Or redeploying within mainstream. So if I have a new child join me in January, for example, after this review window is closed, previously it was a year-round review. Whenever the needs arose, I could apply and say, we have more needs, we need more support. It's now a six-week window. Once that window closes, if I have a new child join with significant needs, I have to move someone else internally. So I'm going to be moving an SNA from somewhere else because this child now is the highest level of need, but that leaves someone else without.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea of redeployment, which they talk about, or review, yes, I can apply for a review if I apply in the next 5 weeks. It's the start of the school year. We're still getting to know these children.
And you are worried, as you said, that some child might have to go without if these resources change. Because we know from hearing from Anne-Marie and other parents, these are very precious resources that are shared in many cases between many children at schools. I'll ask you to stay with us as well, Trina, and to Anne-Marie as well. 51551 for your text if you want to get in touch on this. Paul, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, John.
And thanks very much for getting in touch with us. Ah, you're very welcome. It's good to talk to you. Will you tell me about your boys, please?
My boy got twins at 8 years of age, and I have a six-year-old as well. Henry, which one of the twins, has been diagnosed with dyslexia / dyspraxia, and Luke has been diagnosed with ADHD. And they, again, like Anne-Marie, are getting movement breaks during the day, which is very, very beneficial for them. And we're myself and my wife, Ashling, who is an early childhood educator, we're very worried about the statement that came out last week there, and we'd like to clarify what is actually going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's all very vague and nobody really knows what's going on, so we would really like some clarification on that.
Do the boys have access to an SNA at school currently?
There is one there, and there is a special education teacher there that brings them out for movement breaks, but there has been occasions there where the SNA is far too busy for, you know, any emotional dysregulation that might go on within the classroom. And teachers have to take over, parents have to take over. My wife had to come in at one stage and, calm Luke down. He was underneath a table, you know, so dysregulated, you know. So it is worrying for parents. And, you know, the waiting lists are very, very long. Even to get a private assessment is taking far too long. As Anne-Marie was saying there, early intervention is absolutely key to our kids' future, to try and get them assessed and get the proper treatment that they need going forward in schools.
And Paul, I don't want to go into the specifics exactly of where you're going to school or anything like that, but from what you say, it sounds like your SNA is a singular you're talking about. It's one person maybe divided between lots of children that you could you feel you could do with more resources there.
we could absolutely do a lot more resources. And some schools have more SMAs than others, and that is something that needs to be sorted out as well. With, you know, we don't know how many, you know, kids with special needs in the classrooms, you know. So we have a lot in the school that we're in down in Selbridge, and we're, you know, one school has 8 and we have 3. And we're looking to see, you know, is there, you know...
How does that work, yeah.
How does that work, mm-hmm. exactly, you know? And just to get a bit more clarification, there's an awful lot of parents out there, you know, that are spending an absolute fortune, mm-hmm. you know, on private occupational therapy. We were in a situation where Henry only actually ended up going to one session, which cost us €500, €100 a session for a 45-minute session, and it's expensive. It does get expensive, and it's extra pressure on families all over the country, and extra pressure then that follows on right through the system, mm-hmm. Teachers and parents and even clubs, GAA clubs, soccer clubs, you can see it. There's a huge amount of kids out there that need help, and there's no sign of it. There is no sign of it.
Trina, just briefly to yourself, I just wanted to point out as well, I didn't want to make light at all of some schools having more SNAs than others. It's very complex, and it's based on complex needs of children with additional requirements as well here. But there is confusion, and certainly there's a lot of competition for those resources, it would seem, or people in need of those resources. If the department tells you now that nothing has changed here except for the review process, what more do you want to hear?
But the reality is the review process changing is important, and it's kind of been brushed under the carpet. My belief is the review process has changed significantly because of budgetary reasons. I believe the budget is the issue, and they're narrowing the criteria that they'll grant SNAs under because that will help to tighten up the budget. And we're coming up to a budget. We're coming up to a time when the country makes decisions on what it values, and it's time that we start saying what we value is our children, and what we value is our children with additional needs, because mm-hmm. we've consistently failed in that. And they'll come and they'll use the numbers, we gave this last year and we had this many new last year, but the reality on the ground is we have children in our classroom struggling. They're not getting, you know, external supports, but they're also not getting the supports they need in many schools. We have teachers really struggling to manage then because they can't adequately support the children. We have a leadership crisis in the education system, which is majorly fed into by this. And what they're telling us is, oh, this is just a review. The review is the only way I get SNAs in the school for the kids that need them. This is the only mechanism. There is no other allocation model. It's this or nothing. So downplaying it as just a review is just disrespectful of what it is. They gave a 6-week window for schools to apply for this review. It started a week ago, and schools have not at any point yet gotten official communication that this change is happening. Mm-hmm. So many teachers or principals or anyone listening to this, this might be news to them. They're hearing it on Liveline because there was no email that came from the department or the NCSE to notify us of this review.
Trina, you're putting it out there. This is your budget call for Budget 2026, and we'd love to hear more on this and indeed what you would like to hear in the budget to help you as well. It's Special Needs Education Resources from Trina there. It's Liveline at rte.ie if you want to get in touch. I want to go back to you, Anne-Marie, briefly as well before we move on here as well, because I can hear it from Paul and from yourself, Anne-Marie, and I know it as a parent myself. Early intervention is so important for parents. You just want to get this right, and you need to do it in a timely manner, because you need to know every day, every week, every year counts in your child's education, especially when they have additional needs. But time is really of the essence in your case, Anne-Marie. You're dealing with a lot at home.
Yeah, so basically for Ben, I have terminal cancer. So I have terminal breast cancer. So basically I've been given a very heartbreaking diagnosis that basically I may not be here with my child. I don't know how long I've got with him. So these timelines, you know, these diagnoses take a long time, and I want to ensure that the supports are in place for my child. Unfortunately, my child has a bit more worry on his shoulder than any other child. Any other child who would have a mother who has terminal cancer is quite, you know, they're going to be upset, they're going to be, you know, dysregulated, and you know, it's a lot to go for him. And like, if we give this timeline, you know, I've only got a certain amount of weeks, to apply, get a special class placement. There's no special classes. There's nothing available. You know, the diagnosis time is taking so long. I was on a list for months privately. I'm spending thousands of money to ensure, and everyone else's child across the board, like, you know, every child deserves an education, and the correct supports need to be in place. Like,
you're very selfless in your approach there, Anne-Marie, because as I said, you have a lot going on there. Do you mind if I, and I'm sorry to hear about it, can I ask you, how old are you?
So I was originally diagnosed at 36. So I just want to kind of say this to everybody. Cancer does not discriminate. Cancer doesn't care what age you are, doesn't care if you have a family, doesn't care at all. I originally had pain, and I went to the doctor, and one thing I said about my GP, it was very thorough, and the cancer, I wasn't aware of cancer. And for me, I know I had an anti-hook cancer, but I did all the checks. I felt my, I felt my breast every day. Right. There was no lump for me, and I went to the GP with pain, and basically the GP was like, I got bloods, they were fine, I got scans, and nothing was shown. And eventually a lump appeared. And at 36, to be told you have breast cancer is quite devastating. But to be told it's stage 4, it's incurable, is a diagnosis that I wouldn't wish on anyone. It's just a heartbreaking diagnosis. And not only just myself, but, you know, my family, my friends, you know, it was quite, like, words can't describe. Even now, I can't even process it now. Like, it's just, I have to get on with things. And to have this with the education and to see stuff, like, is quite shocking. As a person who has a short timeline problem, I don't know how many years I've got. Maybe I do. Some people live long, some people don't. I have friends died. You know, they've lasted only a year, unfortunately. They've left kids behind. But to see kind of the education of our children, and the shambles that it's in, not only for special education, and it's just mainstream, any child, like, it's quite disheartening and quite sad to see, like, even kids just have additional needs, you know, so.
Because, Anne-Marie, you're planning for the possibility of Ben's education without you being around, and you said that, you know, you don't even know what to say or how to speak about it, and yet you're speaking so well. How are you staying so strong with this devastating news?
So how I stay strong is I have a community behind me. I have friends of all ages who have cancer. It's alarming to read on the newspapers that, like, we're the second highest country to have cancer. Our services are quite shocking in the public sector. Even if you have private, it's the same story in the education. So I can see the team looking at it from different lenses, from the cancer lens, from the educational lens. It's quite heartbreaking to see this, but I'm dealing with this diagnosis, and I don't know how long I've got. So if I have, you know, till October to apply, and I don't have my diagnosis, my report updated, if he does need a special class, if there's no support in the mainstream, like, I could potentially be dead by the next year. So not for any, not just for me, like, it's for anyone, any parent that have financial struggles or anything. Like, I'm just, you know, I'm trying my best, but how I stay strong is with my network. And I want to shout out to Too Young to Be Heard. This is a campaign that's online again with social media, the same that Trina Golden is doing. You know, she's shouting out for the education system. They are shouting out saying that cancer does not discriminate. Under 40s, people are getting cancer, that there should be mammograms at the age of 40. And Councillor Teresa Costello is doing a fabulous job working in the background, getting that done. And the Too Young to Be Heard campaign is also Siva Cusson, who has terminal cancer. And she's doing a lot. And Myrne McLaughlin and Niamh Noonan, they're working in the background. So, I'm very passionate.
Too Young to Be Heard. People can look it up. From what you're saying, people will be familiar with Breast Check, which they might get offered an appointment when they're over 50. Do you feel your cancer could have been detected earlier if you had received mammograms earlier?
I believe so. If I went to the GP even now, like, and I knew, I probably would have been early lives, you know, but unfortunately I'm not in that case. I did everything right, and yet the cancer spread. I was very unlucky, and I did go to my GP. Again, I had private healthcare. and I pushed for scans. I said there was something wrong with me. I was willing to pay the money because I had the money. I had the private healthcare, but a lot of people are not fortunate and they go to the GP and they get on these waiting lists. Like I've seen the list, certain hospitals are failing. Again, the same thing, but in the education as well. Like it's the same. I'm seeing the same over and over again. Like more needs to be done. We are a rich country. I don't know what's happening. Do we do a model from another? Do we learn from other countries? You know, what can we do better? Okay. You know, these are the future taxpayers. Everybody's getting cancer. You know, we all need to be educated. So I have a lot of thoughts and, you know, to what I see now. So I just want the best for everybody, especially, you know, everyone deserves an education and then in cancer as well. Like cancer does not discriminate, mm-hmm. you know, no matter what age you are. It comes knocking at the door. It's one and two, and the services are not in place. And we have people who are getting these awful diagnoses, screaming and shouting for this, for services to be put in place, and long waiting. So it's the same story I'm seeing over and over again. So like, I'm trying my best. You know, I hope no one else would go through the same that okay. I've gone through.
Well done for speaking out, Anne-Marie. You said you have stage four metastatic breast cancer, and sadly, you learned the news at the very, very young age of 36, just a short few years ago.
Yeah.
Are you sick on a day to day basis? Does Ben know you're sick at home? I'm wondering.
Yeah, so Ben is a very smart little kid. So unfortunately, he was four when I was diagnosed. I had no choice but to tell him.
You what
know,
do you say, Anne-Marie?
The story. It's very hard to kind of, you know, I looked at resources and I got kind of information from other people, but I had to say it as it is. Unfortunately, your mommy may not be here, and he has autism as well. And, you know, there's that to deal with, and then there's this. But he understood very clearly, and he asked me.
Really?
Yes, he's a very bright child. He said to me, will you come back? And I said, no. And he said, okay. And he said, will you go up to the clouds? And I said, unfortunately, I will have to. I don't know. Hopefully, I'll be up in the clouds with the angels. So he's very struggling with this at the moment. You know, and he's going into school and he's doing his best he can. But there are struggles to deal with that. And any child who's been impacted by cancer, there's, you know, it's a very hard diagnosis to deal with, and especially a terminal one. So he has to deal with that as well. So there's a lot of resources. I reached out to the Maria Keating Foundation, the Positive Living Group, the ARC. You know, there's a lot of, I have a community of friends that are also in the same position. And I have seen friends who unfortunately have died as well, and they've left behind children. And this could have been, in some cases, avoided if they had a scan. And, you know, and I've known one person, Steve, a cousin, who went to the hospital to get scanned to the... I'm not going to name the hospital.
That's okay,
you can look it up online. And she was dismissed. And now she has per stage 4 cancer at 23.
Uh-huh.
She was diagnosed at 21. And she's been on the news and she's tirelessly raising awareness.
Yes, I know. And sadly,
I'm very passionate.
Yeah, sadly, we have seen cases of misdiagnoses across the country. Yeah. We see great things happening in the services too, but I'm so sorry that it's happened to you. And that's a devastating conversation for you to have with 6-year-old Ben. I just can't imagine it. How are you getting along now? Are you still managing to have fun and make memories? And I know you're worried about his school now and services there as well, but I'm sure there's so many things you want to do.
Yeah, so I'm making memories with him. We're going places, we're doing things, and he's loving life at the moment, and he wants, you know, learn and stuff, and we're making memories. Now, there are people who defy odds and do well for many years, but unfortunately, it's the unknown, and research saves lives. You know, the treatment that I'm on is targeted therapy, and this is saving my life, you know, to give me that extra time with my family. So we're having fun, you know. It's not all doom and gloom, but when you read stuff like this, you know, special education, you know, it's kind of shocking, and it's putting more concern, not just only on me, but thousands of parents impacted by this who have other worries, you know, and we want an education for our children, and, you know, it goes without saying.
It's one you want to hear more about in the budget and beyond, and that we all need to be talking about. And thank you so much for talking to us about that, Anne-Marie, and also about the need, I suppose, to check your body, to listen to your body, to seek medical help as well if you are worried. And please do contact your GP and medical professionals if you are worried about some of the things that Anne-Marie is talking about, even at an early age. My heart goes out to Anne-Marie. and to her family. And I hope there are many, many, many more days to come and many more good memories to make for her and Ben. Thank you to Paul and to Trina and to Anne-Marie there as well. And it's John Cook here with you this week, and we want to hear more about what you want to hear in the budget, be it from health services to special needs education or things that will help you with cost of living issues. You heard about the groceries going up there in the news at one as well. There is, again, I'm sure it comes as no surprise. It's liveline at rte.ie if you want to get in touch with us. Let's make a liveline wish list for the budget, shall we, or some practical suggestions of where we do need to improve and where we need to spend the money. And let me know as well what you think about the weather. 515-51 if you want to get in touch on this one. 0870-484-8888. And do you always watch the weather forecast? Are you always, I suppose it's as a nation we're preoccupied by it. We're always talking about it. I know myself, the first thing I was hit with this morning was an icy windscreen as I left the west of Ireland to drive to the RTE studios in Donnybrook today. And certainly the times are changing. I should have checked the weather forecast last night. Noel is in Waterford. Good afternoon, Noel.
How are you, John? How are you doing?
Noel, do you always watch and listen to the weather on the radio religiously, or do you think we're obsessed with it as a nation?
We are obsessed with it, yeah, but I do watch it, yeah. 6 o'clock and 9 o'clock news especially. Yeah.
And where
yeah.
does it come from for you? Does it affect your work or what you're going to be doing the next day? Or?
Yeah, I work outside, so it does affect me every day, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you listen intently. Are you one of those houses where you have to go, whisht, the weather forecast is on?
Yeah, very much so, yeah.
I know those kind of houses. You do not mess with the weatherman or the weatherwoman, indeed, as they come on the 9 o'clock news. You were watching last night and you're a bit annoyed. Tell me why you got in touch.
Sure, this is a very trivial thing compared to what you've been talking about now, but I noticed that the new graphic on RTE there, particularly 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock news, somebody decided to put Waterford City underneath the Cumberland Mountains when they're doing the graphic. We seem to be the only town or city on the graphic that's put not where it's supposed to be.
Waterford has moved.
Well, someone's up to moving it, yeah.
Noel, as our correspondent right now, right here on the ground in Waterford, I presume you can confirm for me Waterford hasn't gone anywhere.
No, Waterford's still here. No, we're still here. Still the oldest city in Ireland, and we're still here, yeah, even though we don't get much of a mention now, particularly on the national broadcaster.
Do you think? Do you think you're left out?
Oh, yeah. When you're talking about cities, you start Dublin, Limerick, Galway, and, of course, Cork.
Yeah. You're talking about Waterford, the biggest ones, I suppose. Waterford feels like the poor relation to you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And why is that?
If you spoke to a lot of Waterford people, they'd feel that way.
And why do you think? Why is it because Waterford has a lower population? Or it's a beautiful place, great city. Smaller place, perhaps.
I tell you, I'm proud to be Waterford City and Waterford County man, but I'd say a lot of left behind a lot of ways, politically everywhere.
Really? Or you'll have to take up.
I would, yeah.
With the politicians.
Well, I mean, it was taken up the 24-hour cardiac care, which we were promised. I don't know how many years ago we never got that. We still have to go to Cork after hours. The airport, the standalone university. There's a list goes on and on.
Yeah, I remember.
Not just moving the city and weather forecast.
Yeah. I know about the health campaigns you're talking about. I visited Waterford City and the airport as well, actually, ahead of the elections there to talk to people about it myself there a while back. Tell us about Waterford. Why is it so great and why should we be talking about it more now, Noel? This is your chance. Sell it to us on the national airwaves today.
Well, I talk about the county as a whole. You have from the Cumberland Mountains down, then you have the sea, you have everything you want. Probably the most beautiful county in Ireland, in my opinion. But then I will say I'm biased. As I said to you, moving the city out under the Cumberland Mountains would be the worst thing in the world, but that's not where it is at the moment. So I think our national broadcaster could, the least they could do is get the positioning of it right on the weather map.
Okay. And you're in the sunny southeast. Do you see the sunshine icons more glowing brighter in the southeast, even if you're not seeing Waterford in the right place? On the map.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Today, the sun is splitting the stones down here today.
Brilliant. Now, people will have noticed the weather forecast getting a little bit more sophisticated looking. They're getting to see their towns and villages, maybe smaller places than we might have noticed along the map, as Gerry Murphy or whoever on Met Éireann waves his hand across the map. What does it mean to you? Just obviously, you're looking for the most local information you can get, or do you like to see your town, county, or city there, and to know that they're thinking about you?
Yeah, obviously, as I said before, it seems to be a lot of people think Dublin is Ireland, where it's not. I'm sure you'll talk to people in other counties as well. It's great to see you see small towns like Kilmacthomas and that are mentioned on the weather forecast now. I'm not saying the weather forecast is the most important thing in the world, but it's important to see your own locality, especially on the national broadcaster, I believe. So.
Okay.
As I said to you, I'm sure if you speak to people in all over the country, they're happy to get a weather forecast for their particular area rather than just is it raining in Dublin or not, or Cork at the moment as well.
And Noel, did you notice this specifically recently, as I mentioned, where we're starting to see maybe more place names up on the map, like Kilmacthomas, you said there. I'm looking at some of the maps in front of me where I can see places from Galway to Monaghan to Charleville to Coachford. Yeah. People might be surprised they see smaller place names as well in there as well. Foynes in Limerick, Ennistymon in Clare, places like that. You've noticed just recently, is it something amiss?
Well, it was when the new graphic came on, which is fantastic. Actually, it is very good. But it's when they put up the graphic, like you have Dublin, Cork, Limerick, say Waterford, but Waterford is the only one I can see that's in the wrong place geographically. But like you would see all those small towns. I couldn't speak for whether Coachford or any of these are in the right place or not. But
and it annoyed you. Sitting down to watch the Traitors last night, was it? And you felt like you'd been betrayed yourself.
Yeah, Traitors wouldn't be my cup of tea now. But my wife is sick of me listening to it.
So she wasn't as annoyed as you, is it?
I'll offload on someone else. No, she really doesn't bother her, you know.
She gave you a short shrift. She said, call Liveline there.
She said, just stop talking to me about it.
You got in touch. You're so annoyed you got in touch with Met Éireann.
I got in touch with Met Éireann, yeah, and they told me it was an RT problem, which amazed me. He's made here, and I would have known exactly where Waterford is situated in the world.
And we contacted Met Éireann as well, and you're right, the graphics are not their remit. In a response I have from RTE, they say that they have expanded the range of locations we show on our maps, they say, including smaller townlands and individual suburbs within our cities, particularly during what they call the provincial fly-around sequence. And this change is designed to ensure that viewers across Ireland, not just those in major population centres, can see their own area reflected in our forecasts. And it's to reflect the widest possible range of communities, they say. It's not working, though, for you, I know, Noel, you're saying.
That's a great response, but just put water back where we are, like, you know what I mean? I mean, as I said to you earlier on, being under the Cumberland Mountains is a fantastic place to be, but the city is not under the Cumberland Mountains. It's down.
Okay. Well, the good news for you here, Noel, is that if your wife may not want to listen to you, but we are listening to you here at Liveline. And in response to your query, RTE says that specifically with regard to Waterford, there was an issue whereby in one of our bulletin templates, the graphic system on some forecasts identifying Waterford City to be located in the geographic centre of the county and not the city's actual latitude and longitude. This error, I'm told, was caused by an incorrect database entry, and as soon as we're made aware of it, we sought to resolve it. And they say the issue has now been resolved, Noel.
So it's going to be resolved tonight, because it wasn't last night.
You haven't seen it resolved yet?
No. I'll sleep easy now if it's resolved.
I have a feeling you'll be watching very closely.
It'll make me day. Absolutely make my day. You know what I mean? All we need now is the airport. And we'll be left 24-hour cardiac care, and a few more people get their fingers out, the county will be flying again.
Put those on your budget wish list.
But as I said, it's not about, like, I'm from Waterford City, but I'm from the county. It's county towns, Dungarvan, fantastic place all over. It's just come and visit the place. It's one of the best counties in Ireland, in my opinion. But then again, as I said, I'm biased.
And that's fair enough. Why wouldn't you be?
I just think RTE should be able to get Waterford right where we actually are. Mm-hmm. They speak little enough about us as it is, so we might as well get the geographical location correct.
I'm very happy to speak about Waterford on Lifeline, so keep on talking to us. The error was caused by an incorrect database entry, and it would seem that as soon as they were made aware of the issue, by you, Noel, it seems, they've sought to resolve it. You can tell your wife you were right anyway.
Well, she might believe me, but there you go. It's nice to be right once in a blue moon. What did they say about a stop clock is right twice a day, isn't it?
Kay, good afternoon to you. Kay is in Kilkenny.
Hello. Hi.
Kay, thanks for joining us on Liveline as well. Tell me why you got in touch and what you think about this man, Noel, is saying about Waterford.
Oh, well, I'd agree with Noel, and I feel the same in Kilkenny, I suppose. We're a little city here in the southeast. Now, we're not blessed like Noel in Waterford with the lovely beaches and the coastline and a beautiful city, but we have a lot to offer too. But definitely, we're definitely the poor relation of the poor relation of Waterford. I suppose
in what
people
way?
Tend to think of... In the sense that, I suppose, Kilkenny is the smallest city in Ireland, and much of the time, rightly or wrongly, or maybe just through lack of understanding, we tend to be referred to as a town rather than a city. And we were once the medieval capital city of Ireland, I think back 500-600 years ago, maybe in the 1600s. Now, obviously, I stand corrected on that.
Don't worry, we don't expect you to remember that far back, Kay.
No, we are a city in our own right here too.
What is it, Kay, then? Is it about size or population? Or did Kilkenny get its status, remind us, of city status in more recent times?
Oh, no. Well, again, now I stand corrected. Somebody more knowledgeable, maybe from the Archaeological Society in Kilkenny, would correct me on this. But as far as I know, through my knowledge in school over the years, Kilkenny has always been a city. But it's, I would say the size and the population would determine the fact that because the city itself is so compact, which is very advantageous, especially to visitors, it's very easy to get around.
It's a great city.
It is. It's, and I will say one thing in its favour during the downturn back 20 years ago, our wonderful tourist industry and our agricultural industry, they stood to us through thick and thin.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if other counties feel... Sorry, Kay. I'm wondering just if other counties feel the same out there. And the reason I asked about the city status is because I know this is a debate they have in Sligo over city versus town status as well. 51551 if people want to get in touch on that, or 0870 484 8888 by WhatsApp. You think the smaller cities need a bigger shout out?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, just to acknowledge, we are a small country, but we have so much to offer in tourism. And I think in the times we're living in the world, I think Ireland is a very safe country to visit in many respects. And we're a very welcoming population all over the island of Ireland always. And come to the sunny southeast. Come to Noel's lovely city in Waterford and come to Kay's Kilkenny, KK, as well.
Noel, you've started a movement here.
Oh,
yes.
Well, the only thing I say about Kilkenny, they do have the consolation of every second year, they seem to, well, they didn't win the All-Ireland for a while, but they have enough of them to keep them warm.
They can't have it every time.
You have it on that, Noel, at the moment, 10 years, but we live in home.
Who knows? We're waiting a lot longer, but... But I know you're right about that. The beaches and everything, the Gillamine out there in Tramore. Again, just as you're talking about it, they put the top three or four swimming spots in Ireland. And once again, the 40-foot was number one. I'll tell you, anybody's ever come to the Gillamine, they know the 40-foot is in the halfway place compared to the Gillamine in Tramore. So
we'll have to check it out.
We have everything in Waterford. We have it all. Mountains and sea, whatever you want, we have it.
Just not all of the All-Irelands, you said. Do Kilkenny and Waterford people always get on this well?
Well, for the most part, they do. I have Waterford relatives. I have family buried down in Waterford. I think for the overall scheme of things, we do. Of course, it's going to be friendly rivalry, the same as we'd have with Tipperary, you know, on the boundaries there between Kilkenny and Tipperary. But you know, Waterford are there or thereabouts, and we've been out now for 10 years, since 2015, and who knows what next year might bring. Maybe it could be an All-Ireland between Kilkenny and Waterford. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be great to see it?
You live in hope, Noel, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah.
Well, it'd be great to see it if it went the right way. Well, we did beat you in the minor this year, so we beat you in Wexford.
There
in the
you
minor
go,
this year,
there
so.
You go. So the talent is there. Uh-huh. Just timing.
And Kay,
timing.
While I'm talking to you, Kay, are you seeing Kilkenny on the weather map enough, or are you watching the weather forecast as
no,
intently
now,
as Noel is?
I think that's Noel's expertise. I suppose if it's a fine day, I just take it, and I don't. I didn't get into the technological side, to be honest. Uh-huh. I suppose the weather really is.
You don't watch it as much as it doesn't affect you maybe
I
as
do,
much.
But maybe not quite to the same extent as Noel. I leave that to his expertise at the moment.
I'm not an expert on the weather, other than I get wet the same as everybody else when it's raining.
Yeah, absolutely. And so look, it's always a great icebreaker, the weather in Ireland.
Indeed it is. And I'm wondering what people are thinking about the weather and about their counties or cities and whether they're getting a fair clout. Stay with us if you can. 51551 if you want to get in touch with us on Liveline. Back in a moment.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Dave Cummins, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, John.
Dave, you're in Leitrim, I think. I don't know if you're here to shout for Leitrim or for your position on the map, but you're a good sportsman too, I think.
I am a good sportsman, but unfortunately we won't see Leitrim in any All-Ireland final anytime soon, I don't think. I'm afraid we're not that good. But no, I'm a sportsman, but I'm on the opposite call. I'm a soccer man now for my troubles, you know.
Were you playing soccer at the weekend?
We were, unfortunately, and we went down 3-1, but we gave it as good as we could. We played a team called Riverstown in Arrow Harps in Riverstown in County Sligo.
Sligo, yeah.
Because we're in the Sligo Leitrim League, you know, down here.
Uh-huh.
So we're probably one of the only clubs in Leitrim that's playing soccer, so that's why we're going to the Sligo Leitrim League, you know.
Okay, well, commiserations, but fair play, as you said, it has to start somewhere, and if you're the only club in Leitrim playing soccer, then it's important, and a lot of work goes into it, a lot of time and a lot of money. Tell me about that and the upkeep of your pitches.
Well, I suppose like every year, the upkeep of the pitches, you know, between cutting it and verti-draining it and putting sand on it, lining it. And then, you know, painting, you know, the fences, dugouts, dressing rooms, stuff like that. And then, like this year, we were lucky enough that we got an allocation from the lotto for €14,000 was for ball stops.
Right.
And basically, John, ball stops are at one end of our ground is a river. So the ball, it's a ball netting, and what it does is it stops the ball going into the river. So it's a safety thing for the young people that's playing there.
So and like a big net up behind the goals, is it, from one end of the pitch to the other? Or
It would be behind each goal area. So where the actual goal is itself, the net would be directly behind that, and it would be going up about 20 feet up into the air, and it'd be the full width of the pitch now as opposed to the length. Mm-hmm. And it'd be on either side. You know, it only went up there in February. We started off with a lotto application to try and see if we could get funding for it, and that in itself involves a lot for, you know, for the volunteers who sign in these forms and make sure things have been done right. And the cost of it was 14,000. So obviously,
14,000 for all of those large nets, the ball stops.
14,000, yeah. And basically, the lotto then allocated us 9,000. So locally, we fundraised the other 5,000 to ensure that the job was complete.
Which isn't easy, I'm sure. There's a lot of work goes into that too, to raise €5,000.
Well, there is when you're a small club in a small rural part of North Leitrim, you know, and like there's other clubs there too, like there's Gaelic clubs there and hurling clubs, and you know, it's a very small pot to come out of. So 5,000 like would be an awful lot of money for us to try and raise, but like thankfully we've good support in the town here locally. And, you know, people do support us. And we did raise that 5,000.
And these nets are worth the investment. They're working. They're keeping people safe because you don't want anyone going near the river. Is that it?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we're a soccer club, but we have kids now from the age of five upwards to senior level. And then we actually have a walking football team as well, which is anywhere between 56 and 75 or 76.
Very good.
So we cater for all the community, basically. But the ball stop nets were a safety thing in relation to the kids, because, you know, a kid goes down after a ball that goes wide or goes over the bar. Mm-hmm. And the river was running behind us, so there was always a safety issue there. So we were delighted to be able to get that fundraising and to put them up, you know, from a safety point of view.
So what happened, Dave?
Well, unfortunately, at the start of the season, you know, we do the same things we do every season. We get the pitch ready and we put up our nets and our goals. And just as I was putting the net on one end of the goals, I just looked behind me and I saw a kind of like a gap in the netting and ball stops. I thought, that's very unusual, you know, because a ball won't actually go through it. So I just went over as far as it then, and as I went along the ball netting then, I noticed it was cut in about eight or nine different places. It's cut with a knife or a scissors, you know. It's very blatant the way it was done, and because it goes the width of the field, it's every couple of feet it was done, so it makes it more difficult to repair.
So these are big cuts. This isn't wear and tear.
No, these are big cuts. They're designed to withstand the weather and the football being kicked at us. You know, there's no way possible. But when you actually look at the where the cuts are, you can actually see where it's been just cut down with a knife or a scissors or something similar.
And are we talking about very high up, Dave? Would someone be able to get that high to cut these nets?
Well, you see, the nets would be going from about, I'd say, about 4 foot off the ground right up. So they're easy accessible, and unfortunately there's a grass area behind it with a bank. So that's where they were up on the bank, and it was cut from that, you know. So it's a community park, so it's accessible to everybody. So but the nets are accessible. That's unfortunately just the way it is.
And do we know why they were cut, Dave?
It's just pure mindless vandalism is all we can put it down to. You know, there's no benefit to anyone to cut those nets. It's not as if you'd be accessing somewhere else, you know, that you need to get through these nets, because you can just walk around them, you know. It's just pure antisocial behaviour and just very, very disheartening for all the local people that, you know, go to the effort and try and improve the community with these kind of facilities and things that they put up there. You know, it's just very frustrating.
Did you report it to the Gardaí, Dave?
We didn't report it officially to the Gardaí. Now they are aware of it, because some of the guards are members of the club. The reason for that, I suppose, was that there's no CCTV in the area, and it's in a public park. So unless you were to physically see somebody, it's very hard to pinpoint who's responsible for it. You know, we did put it out in the community there on our Facebook page, and it did make the local Leitrim Observer as well. So we have been making people aware of it. You know, maybe just for people to keep an eye, and if you see something that's shouldn't be happening, and maybe to report it to the local Gardaí here, because they do act and they are very good.
Any theories, Dave, as to what happened or who or why someone would do this?
Well, as much as I say, when you're living in a small area, you do notice antisocial behaviour, and unfortunately, where that football field is. Like there's sheds there at the back of it, and people gather there at night time, and there's outdoor drinking going on there, and as a result of that, like the park has had to be closed. Okay. There's two gates to the park, and they've been closed at night, but unfortunately it's a wide open area, so even though the gates are closed, you can still access it very easily, you know.
Maybe it's something the Gardaí could check on or keep an eye on what's going on there. If there are people out there who know who did this, or there are people out there who cut those nets, what would you say to them, Dave?
I would just let them think, you know, that these nets and these facilities and these things that we put up there, it's for the good of the community, it's for the good of everyone, and by cutting the likes of those nets and something like that, that might leave a gap in these nets where a child could go down towards the river to get a ball, and you know, just think about what you're doing. Do you know, it's for the good of everyone. I'll just give you another just example, John. When I was on there, like we had a defibrillator in there as well, and it was just last year, and somebody went at that with a golf club. You know, so explain that one to me. But like, I do say to people, when you try to be positive, and you just say, look, do you realise that somebody in your family might want that defibrillator at some stage, and as a result, it's not there now because of it's just mindless vandalism.
It is mindless vandalism.
It's hard to describe.
I hate to hear it about defibrillators, about those safety nets, about anything at all. And you're right. Please think about what you're doing and who else might need them there. Dave, thank you very much for joining us. Dave Cummins there. It's 51551 for your text.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Anya, good afternoon to you.
Hi, John. How are you doing?
I'm very well, and thanks for getting in touch with us on Liveline today. You're an SNA.
I am.
For how long?
I'm 9 years. This is my 9th year. And first, I must say, I love my job.
Great.
Love it. And love the kids and love being able to help them. Unfortunately, though, I think by the what they're trying to do is just stop us helping them.
Why do you say that?
Does that make sense? Well, there's lots of kids. I work in a blended classroom where there's a couple of classes. And in each class, you have 3 or 4 different abilities. And there's a child there that needs to go out on a regulation break. And you know by looking at him, he needs to go or she needs to go. But they're not going to let us do that. As far as I can read from that circular that came out, like from the NCSE, they just want you doing care needs like toileting and children that have medical needs.
The concerns put across by some are that maybe the criteria would change in terms of how you handle behavioural issues. Is that what you've read from this statement?
Well, that's it. And even the child that won't stay sitting on the class or in his chair, or the one that can't find their pen, or the child that's just... like. And there's so many children with needs now, it's just unbelievable until you go into a classroom. In my opinion, they're getting worse. I don't know why.
Well, we know that SNAs like you are certainly in high demand. Can I bring you back to the movement break you mentioned there? And
well, we're not supposed to call it a movement break. It's a regulation break now.
Okay. That's what you were told. Were you told that, or are you getting this from these guidelines that we were talking about?
If you were applying to get extra SNAs, you'd need to say they're not movement breaks. They're regulation breaks.
Okay.
Same thing, but...
On a basis...
I don't know why... it means to regulate them, get them to come back to you and all that. So I suppose that probably is a better name than a movement break, maybe.
What I wanted to ask you about the movement break, Anya, is just for people who don't understand maybe the idea or the concept of it.
You're seeing
a child who is maybe struggling to pay attention in class, maybe getting tired.
100%. Getting tired, head down, maybe start crying.
Yeah.
Maybe not able to do the work, you know, not drawing their lines straight. Something simple, can't find a pen. You know, and some children get very agitated when they can't do these simple tasks.
And what I'd love you to explain to us then, Anya, is where you see that, because I'd imagine you can see this coming for a child.
Oh yeah, 100%. You know the kids so well.
And you might head out for a walk or fresh air or what?
Just a walk, kick a ball, do some exercises, just fresh air mostly is the best thing.
Sensory rooms in some schools as well, I think. Do they have them?
Yeah, lots of schools don't have them. So,
yeah.
You can see the benefit of it.
That's what I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
What's the difference? What's the difference when you come back?
Well, you can have a chat with them and talk to them and get them smiling again.
Mm-hmm.
I always feel if you can get a child to smile again, it's the number one. You know, it takes the frustration. They get frustrated.
Of course. But what I mean then well is when that child comes back in, sits back down, do you notice the difference in the classroom? Is the teacher noticing the difference and you can see it?
Most times you will. Most times you will, yes. Yes. And unless they're in really bad form, you know. But most times you will, of course. But they seemingly want the teacher to do this in the class with the whole class.
So your concern now is that you wouldn't be allowed to bring out a child for a movement break on their own, or that would become the responsibility of the teacher. And I know this is what a lot of the people are saying today. Yeah,
They wanted the responsibility of the teacher. And
so the teacher would have to bring everyone out.
So much to do. Bring everyone out or do something in the classroom. But that might not work for this child.
Okay.
You know, they might just need time out.
Anya, thanks very much for raising your concerns with us and well done for the great work you and many other special needs assistants do across the country. It's 51551 for your text.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1. 0818 715 815.
Now, when I began presenting Liveline on today's programme, the one thing I was dreading was on-air silence. It's not about to happen yet, though, don't worry. But I do want to know what a silent call is. Sergeant Katrina Houlihan is in Clare. Good afternoon to you, Sergeant Houlihan.
Good afternoon, John. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks very much for joining us on Liveline. What's a silent 999 call?
Okay, John. So a silent 999 call is when someone dials 999 but can't speak. And that could be due to that they're in fear, they're under threat, or they're physically just not able to speak. And our Gardaí and emergency call takers are then trained to recognise those situations, John, and to respond to them.
Does it happen often?
It does. A significant amount of calls every day where someone will dial the 999. They leave the call open, thankfully, which would allow us then to assess that. The call taker listens carefully for the background noise, the tone, the stress, and they actually then engage with the caller and ask them to respond by tapping on the phone. So they're constantly triaging the call with the call taker, and then we will trace and respond to that call. Now, we also get We have the calls, John, and what people don't know is that you can also text the emergency services as well. So you can actually text 112 or 999 to those numbers. So I will put 999 in a message to 999. And what we would ask for there, because they can't, we don't automatically get a location with that. If you are able and it's safe to do so, to put your air code after that text. Now, those text messages aren't as common, but the silent 999 calls are very common.
And can you give me an example of when or how they might arise, or an example of how this has happened for you or for the Gardaí where you work?
Yeah, so for us, it could happen, I suppose, I'm thinking of medical emergencies, someone living with intimidation or a domestic abuse situation where they make the call, or if there's a burglary going on in their property. So I suppose for myself, I just can think back to a domestic abuse situation where the person rang 999 and left the call open and left the phone down for us to hear everything. And that was vital in our prompt response to that call and in making that family safe. And that the minute anybody rings 999, John, the call is actually recorded from that point. And that's really valuable in two senses. In first of all, we provide the vital lifeline for the person that's under duress. And then secondly, for our follow-up investigation, all that information is really, really important. But I suppose for us, this came from a community question, and it is important that people know that they can silent call 999. So if you believe, if you're intimidated, or if you believe there's a burglary or crime going on at your premises, you can call that, and there's a specific set of questions that the Gardaí are trained to ask. We'll ask those questions with a view to getting an urgent response to you.
And it's all about that response, keeping people safe, preventing crime, hopefully preventing something terrible happening in a domestic situation comes to mind as well. When someone may not be able to speak to you, don't rule out what else you can do is what you're saying. You could hit those numbers on your phone. You could send that text.
Absolutely, absolutely. Always call if you're in danger, even if you can't talk. And don't be afraid. I think it's the key message. Don't be afraid that you're bothering the Gardaí. You're not bothering us. A lot of calls could drop, is what we call it, on a daily basis, John. Okay. And every one of those dropped calls is followed up to make sure that no one is left at risk. You know, so we, the Gardaí, treat every call seriously, and community safety is our priority.
Sergeant Katrina Houlihan, thank you very much for telling us about that on Liveline today.